The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So before giving the talk, I would like to make a few announcements. The one is, I don't think I said this here on Sunday, that a few weeks ago we had a little big fundraising drive for a couple of days for Haiti after the earthquake there. And we raised money for a nonprofit that does grassroots work there, working in partnership with local healthcare workers and called Partners in Health. And it was delightful that we raised about $32,000 for that, and that I'm confident can make a difference and make it for the people of Haiti and the communities where the Partners in Health goes in and partners with people. So that was very nice. And the other is that we're beginning to think again about ways of opening IMC, maybe in October, and maybe with more restrictions on it than we had or planned originally in August. And maybe fewer people and proof of vaccination and things like that. And that, so I thought that for those of you who are interested, especially the local people, we could have a community meeting about this on April 4th, October 4th. And it's a ways away, but, and then next week, I won't be here. I'm teaching a retreat for the next 2 weeks. And so for next week, I'm happy that Max Erdstein, one of the teachers here at IMC, will come and give the talk. And I'm delighted that Max will be able to do that. He had a baby in, I think, in April. So he's been a little bit not teaching so much. But he's ready to do some teaching, and so he'll be here next Sunday. So, for the talk, I've been thinking some this week about an important discourse of the Buddha called the Kalama Sutta. And it's one of the more well-known suttas in the West. And the Buddha kind of teaches, I think, kind of brilliantly in this text. And they're taking his audience, the Kalama people, on a journey. I think of it as a 4 or 5 step journey where he reframes their question to him. In a sense, he reframes it by turning away from abstract questions of truth and falsehood and questions of who is it that speaks the truth and who is it that speaks the falsehood, to directing people's attention inward to themselves with ethical principles of attention, and then applying that in their behavior, and then leading it into pointing to the absence of ill will and the presence of goodwill. So it goes from kind of, Buddha talks about kind of principles to behavior to inner dispositions. And so it's kind of leading the audience through this. And so it begins by the Buddha visiting this country where the Kalama people live. And they've had a lot of spiritual teachers visiting. And they're perplexed by them because they all seem to say things like, I'll quote the text. They say, they explain and elucidate their own doctrines, but disparage, denigrate, and deride and denounce the doctrines of others. So they champion their teachings, but they criticize in dramatic terms the doctrine of others. And they say, we're perplexed and have doubt. They're all saying the same thing, that we teach what's true and other people are all wrong. And so they asked the Buddha, Which of them speaks the truth, and which of them speak falsehoods? It's a question about what is true and what is false. And so the Buddha, I guess he doesn't want to be just one more person that champions his doctrine, and certainly doesn't want to denigrate anybody else. So, but what he does is he changes he reframes the conversation. He doesn't actually answer their question directly about who speaks the truth and who's false. He first says what you should not rely on in deciding what is true. And then he points to how you can know something for yourself. And he doesn't say it's the truth exactly, but maybe it's implied. But you'll see for yourself when I go through this. And so when the Buddha responds and says, yes, it's reasonable you should be perplexed and have doubt, given that all these people are coming and making claims and then criticizing others. But here is something you should be careful for. These are some things you should not rely on you shouldn't rely on these things. And these are kind of spiritual sources of authority, common ones for many people, that they take these sources as providing some access to the truth. And the Buddha says, don't rely on these. And after a number of scandals and challenges in Western Buddhism here in the United States, there was a wonderful Zen teacher named Yvonne Rand, who's now passed away. And she was had a very strong orientation towards being ethical and addressing the ethical, unethical behavior that was going on in Buddhism at that time. And she once said that these... what I'm going to read you now, she said, it's kind of dramatic, tattooed on the inside of people's eyelids. She wanted everyone to know this really well. So he says, do not go by oral tradition. Oral tradition, because there was all oral tradition back then. There was no books. But I guess don't go by the traditional teachings and books, or because it's the tradition, these particular teachings. Don't go by traditional teachings. Or by the lineage of teaching. So if you're in a particular lineage of teachings, a particular organization, religion, denomination, just because it's part of that lineage, don't just accept it as just automatically by that. Don't go by hearsay, just because you've heard it around and maybe it sounds good. Don't depend on hearsay. Don't buy a collection of scriptures. So don't, because it's in scriptures that are particularly important for you or your tradition, the fact that it's in scriptures doesn't make it mean that it's true. And don't go by logical reasoning. So to establish what's really most valuable, at least from the Buddha's point of view, don't go because it seems reasonable or logical. Don't construct a logical argument for it. And don't go by inferential reasoning, kind of intuition, for example. And by reason cognition, more of the same thing. And by some kind of acceptance of it, just because you've thought it out. All kind of similar kind of mental kind of consideration. Or by the seeming competence of a speaker. Just because someone has charisma or seems confident or seems very convincing in how they are, that's not a reason to accept something. And then finally, don't accept it, don't rely on the ascetic is our guru. Just because someone you think is, because that person's my teacher, I should accept it. So all these, be very careful. Don't accept naively or simplistically these sources. It's not a rejection of those sources, but rather that's not, that you might get ideas, you might get encouragement, inspiration, things to think about from all these sources. But they are not the place to find out what is true. Now, the Buddha doesn't actually talk about what's true. He doesn't use that language. But now he talks about principles of what you should go by. And he says, but when you know for yourselves, these things are unwholesome, these things are blameworthy, these things are criticized by the wise, these things, if accepted and undertaken, lead to harm and suffering, then you should abandon them. So, the word for things here can mean action. When there's activities that you do that involve, that are unwholesome, that you can feel they make you feel bad, they deflate you, they somehow feel unhealthy in doing them, then don't do them. You should abandon them. When they're blameworthy, and exactly what that means we don't know, but if they seem unfair or unjust, abandon them. And then if they're criticized by the people who are wise, which means take into account the people who you respect. Maybe they know something that you don't know. Maybe they had more experience or something. So here it says here, when you know for yourself, but here we're relying a little bit on other people, those people who are wise. And what that means is not relying on them on what's true, but relying a little bit to be careful about how we act in the world. And then if you know for yourself that these things, if accepted and undertaken, lead to harm and suffering. So the idea is we don't want to do anything that has the consequences as harm, either to ourselves or to others. But then he goes and says the opposite. If we know for yourself, these things are wholesome, these actions are blameless. These actions are praised by the wise. These, if accepted and undertaken, lead to welfare and to happiness. So that's the principle he's offering. So it's a principle of your own evaluation with the help of the wise people. That's only one of four or five criteria. And so here the emphasis now is on what you undertake, the actions we do. So the Buddha now switches the conversation from the question, which is about truth and falsehood, to action, behavior. And this is indicates an orientation the Buddha has. He's often certainly disinclined to get involved in controversies around what is true and false. So he's not getting involved in the question that was asked, but he's pointing people to a behavior, to their actions. And he's talking about principles for which to evaluate your actions. And they're consequential. There's two things about them that I would emphasize. One is the that there's a reference point to what feels wholesome inside, what feels has a goodness or a rightness to it. It maybe shouldn't be the only criteria, but certainly we want to avoid what feels unhealthy to do, a kind of inner sense of well-being is diminished as we do these things. And then also, it involves consequential thinking. Do these things lead to harm and suffering? Do they lead to benefit, to welfare, and to happiness? And so it involves some reflection, some thinking, some based on experience perhaps, where we have some sense of the harm that these things, or the benefit that comes. And the text does not specify to who, so it could be either to oneself or to others. And we are meant to be our custodians of our own well-being and being careful not to harm other human beings. This is a central orientation principle of the Buddha's teachings. And I probably can't underscore enough how central and important this is. So here he's bringing it up. And then, because he's talking about behavior, he then applies it to particular forms of behavior, which we can understand as the first four of the five precepts. He also goes on to says, well, he applies it to, not to behavior first, but rather to mind states and the behavior that comes from mind states. And he says, is greed wholesome or unwholesome? Is hatred, ill will, wholesome or unwholesome? Is delusion wholesome or unwholesome? And the answer is that greed, hatred, and delusion is unwholesome. That it harms the person who has them. There's something unhealthy about the presence of greed in the person who's greedy. It's often invisible because greed is so focused on the object of what we want, people are not paying attention to what it feels like to be greedy. With ill will or hatred, same thing. People are often focused on what they dislike, and so they're not noticing the effect it has on them. But it's considered unhealthy. And if we act out of that, then that is also unwholesome. So an example he gives is if we kill, steal, engage in sexual misconduct, or lie based on greed or based on anything, that's unwholesome. And those things should not be done. So they lead to harm. But if we analyze or evaluate the situation that this is wholesome, we recognize the goodness in it, and that it doesn't lead to harm, then we do it. But jumping around a little bit, he does the same analysis with non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. And non-greed is not only the absence, it's a wholesome state. He asks them, is non-greed wholesome? And they say it's wholesome. The Kalamas do. So this kind of care and sensitivity, this might seem abstract, it might seem kind of theoretical or principle-based. It is little bit principles, but they're principles that are meant to be oriented towards an inner sensitivity, an inner capacity to feel and sense for oneself what is healthy and what is not healthy, what harms ourselves and what does not harm ourselves, what is beneficial for ourselves and what is not beneficial. And this kind of capacity for clearly being present, being mindful, is something we're training ourselves to do in the mindfulness tradition. And this training to be present and be mindful as we go through our day has this ethical component, because as we are more and more mindful in the present moment, we have access to these feelings, the sensations inside of what has an ouch and what has an ah in it. We kind of feel, we become our own reference point, our own guide for what kind of behaviors to do. That supports us then to avoid greed and stay close to non-greed, avoid hate and stay close to non-hate, avoid delusion and stay close to non-delusion. This is the direction that Buddha is going. As we do this, as we do this kind of care and attention to the present moment experience that arises within us of wholesome and unwholesomeness, as we pay attention to the presence of mind that allows us to pay attention to to consequences, this then tends to lead people to living without ill will, to live unconfused, and to live with kind of clear comprehension of what's happening. So the Buddha kind of now is leading the Kalamas, and he evokes this. Based on living this way, then there is this non-confusion, there is clear comprehension, and a lack of ill will. With those three states strong, the Buddha then moves into being rooted in goodwill, rooted in compassion, rooted in appreciative joy, and rooted in equanimity. And these are these inner dispositions that can arise from wholesome states of being. And these are dispositions that are social dispositions or social emotions. They're how we relate to other people. We relate to them with goodwill or when it's appropriate with compassion, when it's appropriate with appreciative joy, feeling joy, appreciating their success and other people's happiness, and with a certain kind of love or care called equanimity, which is to be caring for people, but to do so without being caught up with any reactivity around it. And so we have this journey. The Kalamas ask about truth and falsehood, and who has it. The Buddha answers differently than the question's been asked. He says, he focuses on what you can know for yourself. He describes the principles of what's useful to know for yourself, and especially the idea of wholesomeness and leading to harm and suffering. He then asks this question about greed, hatred, and delusion, these inner dispositions towards greed, hatred, and delusion, and help people to recognize that these are unhealthy and that behavior that comes from them is also unhealthy. And then he does it for the opposite. And this is all kind of turning the attention in towards oneself. So it's not answering abstractly or philosophically, but he's kind of pointing them inwards. And I see this as a progressive talk, almost like a guided meditation, if you will, encouraging his audience to recognize this in them, these things in themselves. And if they do this well, that leads to a state where there's no ill will, and there's no confusion anymore about what to do and not to do, because we have clear criteria for avoiding harm and doing good. And then there's clear comprehension, there's a clear sense of presence and attentiveness to what we're doing. Not just mindfulness, but a mindfulness where we just be aware of something, but a wise understanding about behavior and action and impact of what we're doing. That leads to a disposition, and exactly how it leads to it, the Buddha doesn't explain, to these things that are highly valued in the early Buddhist tradition, which is goodwill, compassion, sympathy, appreciative joy, and equanimity. And so one of the things I want to highlight in this discussion is that switching the focus from truth and falsehood, the Buddha offers central teachings, core teachings of what he wants to emphasize. And all of these could be, in Western terms, be considered ethical. They have to do with how we behave in relationship to ourselves and our relationship to others, how we behave in our mind, how we behave in our behavior, physical and verbal behavior. And so there's such a central feature of the Buddha's teachings has to do with how we get transformed so we live in the world in a beneficial way. That the transformation that Buddha's looking for is not just to make people who are peaceful and calm and free for themselves, and they go off in kind of an enlightened retirement and have nothing to do with the world anymore. But rather, the whole enterprise is couched, contextualized in being ethical in nature. Or, if you don't like the word ethics, it's contextualized in the healthy relatedness that we can have with the world around us, the people around us. And it's not a practice and a goal that is only to benefit oneself. It's a goal and practice that's there to benefit self and others, and both self and others. So this is my reading of the Buddha's teachings, is one of the really central components of it. And this Kalama Sutta is a wonderful text, both because of the challenge it is to us about what we use to rely on to know what is true, and the Buddha's brilliant way in which he turns that towards avoiding questions of truth and falsehood and rather focusing on behavior. And if you follow through on what the Buddha is teaching here, all really thoroughly, not only is it beneficial for the world around us, as it lead to a disposition, ethical disposition, it also, brilliantly, if you do carefully, leads to awakening, to the spiritual liberation that the Buddha also champions. These two are not separate. They're closely connected, intertwined to each other. So thank you. And this Kalama Sutta is found in the Numerical Discourses of the Buddha in the chapter 3. And it's a delightful text. So thank you all very much.